And I'm not used to all this technology, you know. When I started in the business, I know you find this very hard to believe, but I've been doing this for 45 years. I started at the ripe old age, actually 45, excuse me. I just turned 60. So 46 years. I started with my father working in our retail store at the ripe old age of 14. So when I started in the business, I used to say I'm just a poor, humble fishmonger, because we started in the seafood business. And now I say I'm just a poor, humble food distributor. So we're going to have some fun today. I'm planning on having fun. I hope you are. And one of the things that I want to accomplish today, I've got a slide that's obviously going to talk to us about what we're going to talk about. But I want to tell you, I'm going to share some things with you personally about our industry. I'm very honored, truthfully, to have a chance to meet with you and talk with you and tell you a little bit about what happens after it goes from the packer to final consumption. I know you folks know an awful lot about conception to the packer, but we know a little bit about where it comes from the packer to consumption. And one of the things that's just absolutely amazing to me is this industry. When Phil Trowbridge called me and said, you know, he was giving me the, you know, Phil's a tough guy, you know, so he called me, interviewed me, and wanted to be sure that I might be a decent candidate to be on the Certified Angus Beef Board. And roughly an hour later, it was a telephone interview. He said, well, he says, I think I'm going to recommend you. I said, well, I would appreciate that. Although I didn't realize that part of the responsibility was that I had to do public speaking. Now, what I'm looking forward to, since I've met all the CAB, Certified Angus Beef Board members, and now I've met the American Angus Association members, I'm really looking forward to seeing them come up here and do something like this, okay? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the food service business. I'm going to take you on a little bit of a history, a little bit of a history ride. Our business is 163 years old. It was started by my great-great-grandfather, actually in the 1840s, but we rounded up to 1850. So we're 163 years old. Before I get started, though, I want to talk to you a little bit about an author that's important to me. The author is a fellow by the name of Patrick Lencioni. Now, Patrick Lencioni specializes in organizational health and executive team development. And when you work with organizations like the American Angus Association and Certified Angus Beef, you realize how important it is that organizations have health, that they be healthy, and that they have great team development. Lencioni wrote a book called The Advantage. If you haven't read it, I really would recommend it, especially if you have a situation where you manage quite a few people. Maybe you just manage a big family. That works too. But Lencioni talks about the fact that organizations have to agree on the answers to six critical questions in order to achieve clarity and become healthy. Those six critical questions are, number one, why do we exist? How do we behave? What do we do? How will we succeed? What is most important right now? And who must do what? In our business, in the Palmer family of companies, and I know in the American Angus Association and Certified Angus Beef LLC, and I believe, even though I haven't met all of you, I've met quite a few, but not everyone, I believe we all exist to make this world a better place. I believe we all exist. It may sound corny to you. I don't think it's corny at all. I believe we exist to make this world a better place. We do that by treating others the way that we would want to be treated, the golden rule. And we serve, all of us in this room, serve others by providing supplying superior product. And that's what we do, and that's what we all strive to do in our own way, in this continuum of conception to consumption. From what I have had the opportunity to experience in the organizations, I see this organization working together to be successful. I see this organization determining priorities as circumstances change and acting on them. There's no paralysis through analysis here. I think that's really healthy. And lastly, this organization establishes expectations and assigns responsibilities. And I'm very honored to have an opportunity to speak to you today, and I'm very honored to be associated with you. I also want to tell you a little something else. As part of my talk today, I'm going to share with you some history about our companies and about our sales growth. Before we start, I want you to know that I take no credit for the success of our companies. God has truly blessed me. He has had his hand on my shoulder, and he has directed me. He surrounded me with great people that operate our business every single day. And I believe in my heart of hearts that our success as an organization is truly dependent on God's blessing. Now, one of the fellows from the board said to me, "Are you going to preach today?" I said, "No." I said, "Yes, but no." So let's talk a little bit about Palmer, shall we? Palmer's has, see if this works. I did the personal note. What are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the family history of Palmer's, which is kind of fun for me because it is a five-generation-old business, and my daughter, Kaylee, who's 26, works with me, and I'm really excited about that. In case you don't know, if you didn't read the bio, I have five kids. I'm the busiest man I know. So we're going to talk about the family history, and you can also understand a little bit about how the food service distribution organization developed over a period of time, because Sysco didn't just start, okay, or U.S. Foods didn't just start. It started with independent entrepreneurs who in most cases started with a specialty, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit. So we'll talk a little about the history, talk about the overview, about the company overview. We're the only company I know of that actually operates in three channels. We operate in food service. We're a typical food service, I shouldn't say typical, no food service distributor is typical. But we're a broadline food service distributor. We're a retailer because we started our humble beginnings in 1850. There wasn't any food service. I don't even think they knew what genetics was back then, did they? And we also are in the redistribution business. Now, the redistribution business, which we'll talk a little bit about, is service to other distributors. But we're the only organization that I know of that actually operates in all three channels. Then we'll talk about how we create demand for certified Angus. Then hopefully we'll talk a little bit about any questions or comments that you have, and I hope you have plenty of them. Please don't ask Arlen to ask me any questions, okay? And then by that time, I'm sure they'll probably get the shepherd's hook out, and I'll be on my way. That handsome gentleman that you see on what would be your left is not an ancestor of mine, but he was my great-great-grandfather's partner. I do not have a picture of my great-great-grandfather, Levi Palmer. But that fellow, his name is Seth Green. Now, you don't know who Seth Green is, I don't think. If you do, you're an avid fisherman. But Seth Green was a pioneer in fish farming and aquaculture. He established the first fish hatchery in the United States in Caledonia, New York. He was an outdoor enthusiast who ran a fish and game shop in Rochester before conceiving the idea of fish farming the Great Lakes. Pretty nifty, huh? Well, he was my great-great-grandfather's partner. when they started the business actually as the Center Market, downtown Rochester Center Market, that's what it was called. And that was prior to 1850. In Rochester, Seth Green Trail is named after him. He's credited by some biographers for inventing the first fishing reel. Mr. Green left the firm in 1863. That handsome devil on the right, and if you say I look like him, you and I are going to have problems. But anyhow, that handsome devil on the right is Dwight Palmer I. By the way, my name is Dwight also. Dwight Palmer I, who joined the firm in 1859 and eventually became the sole owner. Back then, all of our fish came out of the Great Lakes. Back then, we had horse-drawn wagons in Rochester, New York. The only refrigeration was ice. They would go down to the fishery every morning. They would pick up the fresh fish. It would go on wagons. They would go through the neighborhoods honking the horns, fresh fish, fresh fish. The scales were on the back of the wagons, and that's how we all got started. We were a retailer. That's what we did. Back then, the only thing that came from the coast was bulk oysters. Anybody know what a bulk oyster means? It's an oyster in the shell. Why do you think that was the only product that could come from the coast? Take a stab. Anybody? They stayed alive. And how they stayed alive? Absolutely right. They could stay alive without refrigeration. So they would come packed in their muck, literally, from the coast. They would come up to Rochester, New York, and then they would be totally cleaned, hosed off, and opened, and they were a delicacy. And for many, many years, it was the number one item sold by the Palmer family was bulk oysters. They were a delicacy. A little factoid. Here's a couple of shots of our location on Front Street from the late 80s. I'm sure the United States Department of Agriculture, as well as the United States Department of Commerce, would not approve of those aprons and everything else. Those photos are significant primarily because you can see the advent of transportation. With the advent of transportation, fish then started coming out of the coast and would come in by rail. Does anybody know what the first thing was that Clarence Birdseye ever froze? Come on, Birdseye, take a guess. No, it was not vegetables, okay? It was fish. The first thing Clarence Birdseye ever froze was a fish. At least that's the story that the fishmongers tell. My grandfather, Dwight II, is on the left, and my great uncle Lawrence is on the right. They succeeded to the business in 1910 after the passing of my great grandfather. It's interesting to note at some point the Palmers did have some partners, but the partnerships never lasted. The company also had a number of locations. Four on Front Street, two on Monroe Avenue, and then my grandfather settled at 141 State Street in 1919. This is an interesting shot because it gives you an idea of what products sold for. Okay, now, just out of curiosity, can anybody see the price on halibut? It's on the right side, it's three down. What does it say? 28 cents a pound. You think there's inflation in the beef industry? Do you know what we paid for fresh halibut this week? It was close to $15 a pound. And we were pleased to get it. Let's take another one. How about two up from the bottom on the right side? Haddock. Now, in our market, haddock's a big item, right? 10 cents. If you can buy it, because Iceland is closed down right now, if you can buy it, it's $8.75 a pound. A little difference, huh? There's a picture of my grandfather at the Monroe Avenue store. There's a picture of the, what was the Main Street store. Now, you guys, I'm sure, know this, but when I go to other audiences, I always ask them what's on the floor. Sawdust, yeah, right, for odor control. You'd be surprised how many people don't know that. And there's a picture of my grandfather around 1919 in the location at 141 State Street, which is candidly where I started in 1978, after school. Actually, 1968, but 1978. I'm sorry, 75. 68 when I was a kid. That's my dad. My father was president of his class, president of his fraternity, went to Hobart College, was captain of the football team, and his son couldn't play football to save his life. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my dad. My father, as I said, graduated from Hobart College with a degree in business, was drafted into World War II, ended up in Okinawa, and after Okinawa, came back and went to Harvard Business School, and got his MBA at Harvard in labor relations. The time was about 1948, and where do you think somebody could go with a Harvard MBA in 1948? Now, to give you an idea of the magnitude of this decision, when my grandfather passed in 1951, the business was valued at $6,000. But my father, with a Harvard MBA, went in the family business. And the story goes, we were talking about how important professors are and teachers. His professor, Miles L. Mace, had him write a master's thesis on small business, and he chose to write about the family business. It was a 39-page, single-spaced report, and he went in the family business, sold himself on coming in the family business when he wrote his master's thesis. When my father joined the business, we were 90% retail still, 10% wholesale, and we sold basically fresh and frozen seafood. There's a shot of the store in 1957. Now, as a kid, I remember going, I'll give you a kid's story. I'm a storyteller. When I was a kid, you know, refrigeration wasn't too reliable when I was a kid. So my father was always afraid that maybe the refrigeration might not be working in one of the coolers. So when we finished church, we would have to go up to the company and we'd have to check the coolers before we went out for lunch. And I remember going through there and basically helping my dad check to be sure the temperatures were right there so that everything was okay. And next door was Mike's Bar. And the next door to that, we actually owned the property. It was my grandfather owned the property. It was a barber shop and a shoe store. My father came up with the slogan with an advertising guy, "Make your next dish Palmer fish." Now, believe it or not, somebody's actually absconded with that. It's Icelandic, and they use the term, "Make your next dish Icelandic brand fish." But we're not going to sue them. It's okay. They can use it. But that was my father's "Make your next dish Palmer fish." By the time I arrived at the company in 1975, when I finished college, we were 90% wholesale, 10% retail. It totally flipped. As a shot of my dad, for years, we would basically break even or lose money most of the year, and we would make enough money during clam bake season that it would carry us for the year. Clams were a big deal. They still are, but not as big as they used to be. And there's another shot of my dad. Does anybody know what kind of fish that is? That's a big fish, huh? Halibut, very good, very good. If I had a candy bar or something, I'd throw it at you. This picture of my dad, he was honored by the American Legion for the continuous flying of the flag in front of our building. I miss my dad a lot. Another picture of my dad. That was his office over Mike's bar. We cut a hole through the wall. He paid him $100 or $150 a month. We refurbed it. It at one time was a flop house. And that's where my dad's office was. And we took over the barber shop and we took over the shoe store. And that was our facility. That's the same building my grandfather purchased in 1919. That's the same building I worked at in 1968, the same building I worked at when I graduated from college in 1975. Back in the 1960s, there was a fellow by the name of Cohen who owned a company called CFS Continental. And CFS Continental was actually known for being primarily coffee, but they had branched out. And Mr. Cohen, when he spoke to the industry, began talking about the possibility that the only distributors that will remain long-term will be broadliners. He's the one that came up with the idea of broadline. Prior to that, we were all specialists. I mean, there had to be six or eight fish companies, six or eight meat companies, ten or better produce companies, people that were in the dry goods business, people that were in the equipment and smallwares business, people that were in the coffee business. People, if you could imagine it, there were all kinds of distributors. And a restaurant or an institution would do business with 10, 15 distributors. Everybody had their specialty. But Mr. Cohen's vision that he articulated to the industry was, that isn't the way it's going to be. And my dad and I had a couple conversations. You know, one thing, my father never encouraged me to go in the business. I don't know if you know that. He was one of the best soft sells you'd ever want to see in your life. He said, son, I just want you to be happy. Whatever you do, son, I just want you to be happy. Well, I graduated from school. Candidly, I had no intention of going in the business. I was going to be an attorney. I'm thankful that I didn't do that. I'm very thankful I went in the business. I graduated with a dual degree in political science and economics. Graduated with honors on a Saturday and started schlepping fish Monday morning. So I'm going to tell you. While I was at college, my father had a friend in Cincinnati called, his name was Don Lynch, and Don Lynch owned a company called Lynch Fish. And my father and Don Lynch were very good friends, and they both served on the National Fisheries Institute and had both at one time chaired the Distributors Committee for the National Fisheries Institute. So Don Lynch called my dad one day and said, hey, bud, why don't you come on down to Cincinnati and see my operation, and I want to talk to you about food service. So my dad called me because Cincinnati, I went to school at Wittenberg, which is a little school in Springfield, Ohio. It's right on the same stretch right down to Cincinnati. My father called me on the telephone and said, would you like to go down and see Lynch Fish? I said, sure, let's go down. So he picked me up. We got down there, and Don Lynch had just joined a cooperative called Frosty Acres, and he was selling things other than fish. Might not sound too novel, ladies and gentlemen, but let me tell you, back then that was different. Okay, so we're driving back to Springfield, Ohio, and Dad said, what do you think? I said, what do you got to lose? You know, you got to pay $3,000 for the license to be able to become a co-op member. Makes sense to me. Let's put more stuff on the truck. So that's how we started selling other things. But we were still at 141 State Street. So I do this because I use my hands. So I start with a company, as I said, graduated on a Saturday, start Monday morning. I'm with the company about 3 months, And my father calls me up to his office. Now, my father and I never worked together. You say, why? You're so easygoing. Well, I was 22 years old. I was a smart kid. I thought I knew everything, okay? To be perfectly honest with you, I wasn't too smart. I was young, but I wasn't smart. And my father never wanted our relationship to be jeopardized as father and son. When we were in the business, he was the boss. Outside the business, I was his son. So, back then, we had intercoms. We weren't computerized yet. I remember when there were no computers. So he called me on what was called a Terryphone. It was like a public address system. Kip Palmer, report to my office. So I get my stuff. I go upstairs, okay? Go through the wall into Mike's bar. Not the bar, but you know what I mean. Go into his office. I'm there, and I got a vision of this, right? I got my boots on. I got my frock on. I got my apron on. I got my Palmer hat on, and I smell like a mackerel. And I said, Dad, I've got orders to put up. I got fish I got to do. I got trucks to load. Son, I've got to talk to you about something. Okay? Your mother and I have made enough money that we could close this business and we could live happily ever after. He said, but that's not what I want to have happen. This business was a gift. It was given to me by your grandfather. I'd like to give it to you. But I need to know what your intentions are. So I'm going to give you a year to make up your mind. Now, you know, when you're 22 years old and you hear something like this, you kind of think, wow, is this the flavor of the month or what? I mean, well, what's going on? You know, I mean, she can't be serious about this, right? So he says, I'm going to give you a year to make up your mind. At the end of a year, I'm going to call you up to my office. And I want an answer one way or the other. If you tell me you're staying, you're condemned. You'll be here the rest of my natural life. Whoa. Now, my father was very organized. Harvard MBA. Very organized. He had this year's calendar in this pocket, and he had next year's calendar in that pocket, and I'll guarantee you he wrote it in, and for 1 year he did not say one thing to me about what my decision was. Not one thing. A year passed, and at that point, my father said, okay, son, calls me up to his office, same thing. I still got the different apron, different frock. Got my boots on, I got my frock on, I got my apron on, I got my hat on, I smell like a mackerel, and I said, Dad, what do you need? I want your answer. I said, I'll stay on one condition. You got to promise me that you'll find us another facility because we're handling products 7 times before it gets to the customer, and we're going to go out of business in this location. He shook my hand and he said, son, you got a deal. This is an interesting truck. You may not think it's too interesting, but it's a piece of history of our company because you can see we still have the fish, but you see that we have food service in the name, and you see that it says Frosty Season, Frosty Acres, and that's the kind of trucks that we used to operate, little 10-foot trucks. So we moved out to Jefferson Road, 900 Jefferson Road. We had about 15,000 square feet, roughly. We built a freezer, 5,000 square foot freezer, 2,500 square foot dock. That was in 1978, and then some of the other building was there. So we had about 15,000 square feet.